Thank you for visiting Shift Shapers Pole Reversal Radio. You probably came to our podcast site to catch one of our interviews, or you might be here because you know something isn't right with that story they're telling you, that the economy is about to be rescued, everything will start growing again. Corporations are here to help you. Global trade is good for us. Toxic sludge is good for fish. And oh yes, war is peace. On Shift Shapers, we interview today's thinkers and authors about economic meltdowns, shady military and surveillance programs, climate shock, and fuel shock, also known as peak oil. They give us a true reading of what is in front of us and some clues about how to survive and go forward in an uncertain future. While you're here, browse through our menu of interviews. You'll find Michael C. Rupert, author of Reinventing Collapse, Richard Heinberg, author of The End of Growth, James Howard Kunstler, author of The Long Emergency, Derek Jensen, author of Endgame, Jacques Fresco and Roxanne Meadows of The Venus Project, Guy McPherson, author of Walking Away from Empire, Alex Smith, Radio EcoShock, Mike Sozabee, filmmaker of Somewhere in New Mexico Before the End of Time, Carolyn Baker, author of Sacred Demise, Kathy McMahon, Peak Oil Shrink, Medea Benjamin, Code Pink, Pam Larry of Right to Know and Label GMOs. Also, numerous people involved in the transition, 350.org, alternative currencies, workers' cooperatives, and the Occupy movements. You will even find bilingual postings in Spanish and English. Welcome to Shift Shapers Pole Reversal Radio. Enjoy your podcast. Shift Shapers. Here's a question. If all of us, including climate scientists, could add persuasion and intelligence into our use of language, could it help us slow down the onslaught of carbon pollution in our air? Maybe even turn us around in our march toward climate destruction? Or could it maybe even help get a date? Now we have your attention. Dr. Joe Rahm, climate scientist and green energy innovator, has written a book, Language Intelligence, that he believes will help us accomplish all of this and more. Dr. Rahm discovered the need for language intelligence several years ago.
I started talking to climate scientists, and I found two things, one of which was that the climate situation was more dire than I thought, and secondly, climate scientists were not doing a very good job of communicating that to the public.
The stakes are high. Raging climate has brought floods, wildfires, water shortages, and crop losses that are already causing global conflicts.
For instance, Syria. I mean, obviously Syria has a repressive regime, but the entire Mediterranean has been suffering from a progressively worse drought because of climate change.
It's time to communicate.
Most of us spend most of our waking hours communicating, and we're not taught in school what the secrets of effective communications are.
Join me, your host, Daniel Kerbein, as I interview Dr. Joe Rahm, Senior Fellow of the Center for American Progress, manager of the blog Climate Progress, and former Assistant Secretary of Energy under Bill Clinton, author of the books Hell and High Water and Language Intelligence, on the next Shift Shapers, Wednesday, 5 to 6 p.m. on KBBF FM 89.1. Welcome to Shift Shapers, Pole Reversal Radio. I'm your host, Daniel Kerbein, and I have on the phone with me Dr. Joe Rahm, who is, when you are on the subject and you are on the debate of climate change, raging climate events, what they mean to us, what the future looks like, what do we need to do about it, this is the go-to guy, and really has been for a while. Thank you for joining us, Dr. Rahm.
Well, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And one of the things that I would like to share with our listeners is a little bit about your background, because it's something where once you understand the experience and who we're talking to here, it can start to unfold a little bit where we're going with it. So first of all, currently, Dr. Joe Rahm is a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress, where he maintains and edits the climate blog, Climate Progress, which focuses on climate science, policy, and reporting. In 2008, he was elected as a fellow of the American Association of Advanced for Science, graduate of MIT, PhD in physics, Rocky Mountain Institute, lots of research into the oceans, United States Department of Energy, special assistant for policy and planning from 1993 to 1995, the largest research and development program in the world with a budget at the time of $1 billion and 550 employees to develop and use advanced clean energy technologies, and then principal deputy assistant secretary in the Office of Energy. This would be all during the time when Bill Clinton was president then.
That's the Clinton-Gore administration, yes.
It's kind of interesting because you go from there to where you are blogging, and you've written some books as well since then, one in particular, which is Hell in High Water, kind of a Jeremiah, like warnings that humans have a window of opportunity of only a decade or so to head off the most catastrophic effects of global warming.
Now, my brother had lost his home in Hurricane Katrina, August 2005, seared in the minds of many, and he lived in Pass Christian, Mississippi, and had 20 feet of water in his house a mile inland, and his house looked like the inside of a washing machine, and he was trying to decide whether he should rebuild or not, obviously a big decision for anybody. And I had studied physical oceanography at the Scripps Institution of Oceanography down in the southern part of your state, Hoya. So I started talking to climate scientists, and I found two things, one of which was that the climate situation was more dire than I thought, and secondly, climate scientists were not doing a very good job of communicating that to the public. So I decided I would go into, you know, climate communications. And also, because of my background on clean energy, I knew that we have the solutions to take this country on a path off of fossil fuels. And so on climate progress, I spend as much time on laying out what the problem is as laying out what the solution is.
And, you know, one of the things that I've mentioned to my listeners before is that climate progress is one of those blogs where it's totally, constantly attended to. You go there on any given day, you're going to find new material. And it goes on all day. It's really well attended. And it has very hard-hitting stuff. It's a very impressive blog.
Yes, thanks. The Center for American Progress Action Fund has a large staff of experts to draw on. And there are about sort of 2.5 to 3 full-time bloggers. And I have one blogger who's an expert on clean energy, and he blogs a great deal on wind and solar and clean energy, and I blog on the climate science, and we have some climate politics. But yeah, we try to have 8 or 9 posts a day during the week, and I try to have 3 or so on each weekend day.
Yes, it's very thorough, too. And one of the things I want our listeners to know is that we will be going into some discussion about Dr. Rome's latest book, which is titled Language Intelligence, Lessons on Persuasion, from Jesus, Shakespeare, Lincoln, and Lady Gaga. So stay tuned on this. It'll be in a couple minutes. I'm going to ask a few questions, though, first about the status of what I call raging climate now, but it's always been called climate change. What are some of the, when we look at climate impacting on wildfires and floods and tornadoes, as you're pointing out on your blog, what's our situation right now? What's happening with climate?
Well, the climate scientists have for many decades said that if you keep putting these heat-trapping gases in the atmosphere, principally carbon dioxide from burning coal, oil, and natural gas, that you would trap more heat, and the planet would warm up, and that would lead to a number of impacts. Ice would melt, and obviously we are seeing ice melting everywhere. You would have more intense heat waves, and we've been seeing those. And heat dries out semi-arid lands, so you tend to get more intense droughts. And in fact, we've also been seeing that. And when you have heat waves and droughts together in the West, you're going to see forest fires. So we've had the wildfire season in this country has been extended about a month. And another interesting prediction which has come true is that as you heat up the oceans, you evaporate more water off of the oceans into the air, and that extra moisture gets swept into these big storms and dropped as deluges. So you expect to see more intense rainfall, and I'm sure everyone has noticed that we've been getting, you know, these more intense deluges, you know,
yes,
where you see, like Florida did, 1 foot or 2 feet over the course of 24 hours, or several inches over the course of a couple of hours, and this weather becoming more extreme, and I think everyone has seen that. You know, out here on the East Coast, our winter was kind of like spring, and spring was so warm it was like summer, and summer was the hottest on record. So we're just seeing the beginning impacts, and if we don't take action soon, this is going to be the new norm. We're just going to see this kind of extreme weather year after year. So, you know, it has serious consequences in particular for our agricultural system. You know, when it's extreme weather, people can go indoors.
Right.
But our crops are fully exposed, and this has been the most extensive drought in over half a century, and it has been devastating to the corn crop and the soy crop, and that causes food prices to rise. And, you know, we keep adding a billion people every 15 years to this planet, and I think you're going to increasingly see food prices spike up as because of extreme weather.
And that's one of the things, too, that, like you were saying about having spring in the winter, and it sounds like, oh, great, I can go out with a short-sleeve shirt in February and March up in, Oswego, New York. But what that means is that the snowpack melts prematurely. It means that ice packs melt prematurely, and those are principal sources of water for crops and for public water supply. So it's not this super nice, sweet little, you know, gift of spring. It's actually very ominous when that occurs.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, certainly out in the West, where it tends to be quite dry, very little precipitation in the summertime, you have this, you used to have snow melt lasting through May and June and July, and that water from the streams would provide moisture and humidification. But yeah, we've in the Sierras and the Rockies, we've moved up the snow melt peak already by 3 weeks, and we're on track to, you know, move it up even earlier. And this year we set a record. One of the reasons this is one of the worst droughts on record is because we had like the least amount of snow in a very long time, and by May it was the record for the least amount of snow cover. So, yeah, I mean, certainly when the summer is hot, everyone can see that is devastating. But it's when the spring is warm, it has all these other consequences too. Well, as you say, it melts the snowpack. It also helps allergies. I mean, I don't know what the allergy season is out there, but
it's
again,
big.
One of the worst allergy seasons. You know, here on the East Coast, again, because it was so warm, that the allergens get a head start.
Right, right. They start early. And then with every rainfall that comes, you get succeeding generations of them, which causes the season to extend.
Well, don't forget, and we had also invasive species. This is another thing. I don't know how much of the California forests have been devastated by the bark beetle, but in places like Colorado in the West, the warmer weather has two effects. Because fall and spring are sort of milder, the bark beetles have had two mating cycles per year, and because the winters are milder, they don't get killed off as much. So you've been seeing this record of devastation by the bark beetle.
Yeah.
And
so you get dead, dried out forests.
So yeah, it's pretty serious.
Yeah, all it takes is just one lightning strike, and you have an entire forest going up because it's largely dead because of the attacks of the beetles.
No, absolutely, and then of course you have this West Nile virus.
Right, and that's showing up. That is showing up in California.
Yeah, and that's again, this is fueled by the warming. When you change the climate, it favors invasive species.
Yeah,
and we open up the forest to the bark beetle, and the mosquitoes that have certain diseases have a wider range. So yeah, I mean, I don't want to be all doom and gloom here. I think if we don't act, it's serious business. On the other hand, you know, California has been a real leader in climate action and clean energy, and if the rest of the country could do what the state of California is doing, then we'd make some real progress towards avoiding the worst.
And I want to if we could stay on this subject of the larger global picture, and I think this would be a good jump off point, but I do want to just insert one more question. And this has to do with, you know, we're starting to see conflicts in various parts of the world that start to look like food supplies, desertification, forced migration are starting to lead to conflicts in various parts of the world. And I'm wondering if you're noticing that. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think I've seen some commentary in Climate Progress pertaining to that. And I'm wondering if you have a comment about that.
Well, there's no question that resource, as water in particular, gets drier in certain places, you're going to create problems because we have 7 billion people and they have settled in places based on what the rainfall was and where the rivers were and what the sea level was. And if you suddenly raise the sea levels and dry out certain semi-arid regions and lose glaciers that feed rivers, you suddenly have a lot of people living where it can't support that many people. And where do those people go to? I think that, Syria, I mean, obviously Syria has a repressive regime, but the entire Mediterranean has been suffering from a ever progressively worse drought because of climate change, and there was a major study that came out last year on that very subject.
Yes.
So what happens is the drying and the extreme weather just adds fire to a tinderbox and can set things off.
And so here we are, we're starting to look at presidential candidates here, and there's all this debate. You had mentioned, Dr. Rum, and by the way, for our listeners, you are, of course, listening to Shift Shapers, Polar Reversal Radio. I'm your host, Daniel Kirbine, and we are talking to Dr. Joe Rome, who is a senior fellow for the Center of American Progress, and he maintains the climate blog, Climate Progress, and is a past deputy secretary, assistant secretary for the U.S. Department of Energy, the go-to guy when it comes to climate. And I want to ask you, Dr. Rome, about, you know, there's a lot of debate, I guess, about to happen in the presidential election and various, shall we say, smaller elections, but that are very influential, congressional, et cetera. And I am not hearing much in the conversation about the raging climate situation, about climate change and climate protection from anybody other than this ridiculous comment that Romney made in his acceptance speech for the Republican presidential nomination. And I'm wondering, where is the you have just written a book called Language Intelligence, and I'm wondering what's happened to the language right now about climate change?
Yeah. I have spent a long time studying the best communicators throughout history, and I discuss the secrets of persuasive communications, how to be more memorable in language intelligence. And there's no question that when presidential candidates and when the president himself talks about an issue and repeats it, it becomes a greater priority. And as you said, climate change, global warming is one of the most serious issues that we have, but it doesn't get talked about very much. Mitt Romney did mock President Obama in his convention speech, and he said, I'm not going to try to slow the rise of the oceans or heal the planet. And the president did respond with a couple of sentences in his speech that reducing carbon pollution is important because the planet is warming up and because of droughts and floods and wildfires. But considering how consequential this issue is, it certainly is not getting talked about anywhere near as much as it ought to.
And not effectively either. And I'm going to mention here for our listeners that Dr. Joe Rom is the author of a brand new book, just came out. It's titled Language Intelligence, Lessons on Persuasion from Jesus, Shakespeare, Lincoln, and Lady Gaga. And one of the commentaries that you made, Dr. Rome, in your blog, Climate Progress, I think it was today or yesterday, involved what you view, and I agree with you, is really a grievous error in handling this debate. If somebody denies climate change or whatever, that human-caused global warming, that the way he handled that, the way President Obama handled that, was just playing right into, with the kind of language he used, playing right into exactly what Governor Romney had said. So would you care to flesh that out a little for us?
Yeah, in language intelligence, I talk about the research that shows that if you want to debunk a myth, you shouldn't repeat the myth, because that can stick in people's minds. And the Centers for Disease Control has found this quite clearly when it's been trying to debunk myths about flu shot, for example. And they clearly have shown that if you print one of these forms that says, you know, here's the myth and here's the reality, that a very large fraction of people, I mean, it would, you know, 3 weeks later, 40% of the people who, you know, particularly over the age of 50, misremembered and thought the brochure was promoting, you know, they remembered the myth as fact, and they remembered the Centers for Disease Control as the source. So the president repeated a myth, but I think the point is that, you know, the planet is warming, and climate change is very serious science, and the impacts are real and happening now. Climate change is not just going to affect other people in other countries a long time from now. It's affecting Americans today, and it's a problem that is solvable if we act in time. And I think when you are presenting or talking to any group of people, it's always better to focus on what the facts are than repeating something that isn't true only to say that it isn't true.
It's denying the denials.
Yeah. And
those denials are not true.
Yeah, well, and I talk in my in the book Language Intelligence about, you know, it's a very common mistake people make, and I mean, Richard Nixon famously said, "I am not a crook."
Yeah.
And what do people remember?
Oh,
they remember the word crook because it's such a strong word. And as I say in the book, it's like when you talk. I have a 5.5-year-old daughter, and you don't want to say things like "don't whine." You want to say use your normal voice, you know, because if you keep repeating the negative, that's what, you know, the kid is going to remember. So it takes a lot of effort, but there are a whole bunch of, in language intelligence, I go through, you know, the basic rules of persuasive communication, which are sort of the opposite of what I learned getting a physics degree. When you get a physics degree, you're taught use big words, don't repeat yourself, and be very literal and fact-based. And in fact, we have 25 centuries of wisdom that says that if you want to be persuasive and memorable, you should use shorter words and repeat yourself and use figurative language like metaphors. And modern social science research has confirmed this. That's why advertisers use the figures of speech metaphor and puns and repetition. It isn't hard to be more persuasive, but it isn't what's taught. And so if people want to become more effective communicators, whether you're speaking to one person or whether you're speaking to a whole group of people, these are the secrets. And I've tried to make the book as lively as possible, which is why I've got, you know, Shakespeare, Lincoln, Jesus, and Lady Gaga.
Yes.
There's a lot of pop cultural discussions of lyrics. I talk about Bob Dylan and
Seinfeld.
You know, people... One of the things I find is that people think, oh, like they look at Bill Clinton and they'll think, oh, he was born a great speaker and I could never do that. And one of the points I try to make in the book is that's just not the case. People really aren't born great speakers. They are raised a certain way or they study it themselves, as Lincoln and Churchill did. And I actually give the example of Bob Dylan. He didn't just come to the language that he wrote. He wasn't born that way. He would go to the New York Public Library regularly and get out the newspapers from before the Civil War and study the language, because he said he was interested in the language and the rhetoric of the times. He said that in his autobiography, and my point is just that obviously he's a very talented musician, but he's also a guy who studied the kind of language he wanted to learn how to use. And in my experience, anybody can learn these strategies and be a more effective communicator.
And one of the things you also point out is that, is it Bernard Lakoff who the book is Don't Think of an Elephant?
George Lakoff.
George Lakoff, yes. And one of the things that he keeps really pounding on in this book, it's a well worth reading, is the importance of controlling and framing the debate that these Republican and right-wing think tanks have been developing talking points that are repeated, and that Lakoff is saying, control the debate and frame the debate in your own way. Forget about their framing. Get the listeners, whatever listeners that you have, framing that debate and repeating it, and that is the secret of having, multiplying the strength of what they're spending money on for think tanks, we could actually be doing in protecting our own planetary habitat. And is that part of the mission of language intelligence?
Yes, absolutely. And I talk about Lakoff in the book. This is very related to the notion of not repeating a myth if
yes.
you want to debunk it. And
especially
and
their myth.
Is this notion that you don't want to repeat the whole worldview of somebody that you just disagree with. You want to explain what your values and worldview are. A good example is in the case of global warming. There are a lot of people who, it seems, don't believe in global warming because they think that it can't be solved, or solving it is going to require some sort of massive government. The fact is that's not true. It is a solvable problem. It needs to be solved largely by the free market, but we are going to have to make polluters pay for pollution, otherwise they're just going to keep polluting. And, you know, if people are worried about big government, they ought to worry about more and more extreme weather, because it's always government that has to come in and clean up those messes and then decide, can people live in a floodplain or not? And as the weather becomes more extreme, much, much harder choices are going to have to be made. And I'm hoping that if we could adopt a sensible strategy to reduce emissions, it would benefit business and public health.
Well put. And when we start looking at insurance companies that are beginning to no longer insure parts of the country because they're in floodplains, things of that nature, one of the points that you're making is about why address and why try to deny what someone is saying about an opponent of the view that climate change is a serious matter and is occurring all around us, when the science that they're using is the science of a third grader that actually is denying real science. It doesn't even deserve being addressed, in my opinion. That's just my humble opinion on it. Your host, Daniel Kirbine, said this. But where I'm going with this is that we really do have, like on that rising sea level issue, Caltrans in California here, the guys with the orange vests out there that are fixing the infrastructure, they issued a report 2 years ago that said that by the year 2030, there will be no San Francisco airport. There will be no Oakland airport because of sea level rise. There will be no Highway 37. It's already planned because of sea level rise. So it is a serious impact here in California. And it looks like you have provided something where, how can people, let's say people purchase the book, what would be like a highest and best use for what they learn from that book, Dr. Joe Rome?
Well, I think everybody, no one communicates perfectly all the time. We blurt things out and the like. The point I try to make in the book, though, is that those times that you want to have good communications, whether it's persuasive speech that you have to give, whether you're on a date and you want to be memorable on a date, whether you're on a phone conversation and you're trying to get this contract or a client, or whether you're walking in for a raise, how do you make the most compelling and persuasive case when it really matters? And the point of the book is, it's not random. It's not some people are born great speakers and others aren't. The Greeks figured this out 25 centuries ago, and the Elizabethans perfected it in English, which is why the quotation books are filled with quotes from Shakespeare and the King James Bible. And if you want to be more memorable, or as I say, well, one of the people on Amazon said they read the book and they're already getting their tweets are getting retweeted more. Because in tweets, you have to be pithy and memorable, and you want to stand out from the crowd. So, and I talk in the book about, you know, writing. It isn't just public speaking, but writing online or writing emails or writing tweets. These are the strategies for being more persuasive and being a more effective communicator. And anyone can learn them, and I mean, certain professions ought to really know this, like if you're a lawyer or a professional communicator or a professional marketer. These are things that you absolutely have to know. But most of us spend most of our waking hours communicating.
Yes.
And we're not taught in school what the tricks are, what the secrets of effective communications are, and I spent a long time studying them, and I put them into language intelligence.
It is a breakthrough book, and you've really added a lot of purpose to it, because when I looked at it, I first thought, well, this is great, because now we can start framing the debate in the environmental arena, and as I go through the chapters in it, this is stuff that pretty much any, like you just said, anyone who communicates can have something that, some benefit that they can get from it. Dr. Joe Rome, can you give our listeners some websites or some other information about where they can find out more about climate change and particularly about climate progress?
Yeah, well, if you want to sort of keep up with the latest on climate, what's going on in the science, what's going on in terms of clean energy, what's going on in terms of the politics, you can go to climateprogress.org. I certainly believe it has become the most widely read site for a reason. There are other very good websites. If you're sort of mostly interested in understanding the science at a level, you know, you where you can sort of argue with your friends, there's a good website called Skeptical Science, which I recommend. And if you want to buy the book, Language Intelligence, you can go to Amazon. It's been the number one book in public speaking since it came out about 5 weeks ago. And you can buy the Kindle for $9.99, and you can buy the paperback for a little over $10. So it's a good price if you're able to have one more effective communication than you otherwise would have. Is that worth $10 to you? I think it probably is.
And get those tweets out there. Yes. Well, I want to thank you again, Dr. Joe Rome, the Senior Fellow at the Center for American Progress, Fellow of the American Association for the Advancement of Science, and who Rolling Stone magazine has named one of the 100 people who are changing America. It's been a delight to have you on Shift Shapers, and quite an honor as well. So thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.